From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Wednesday, May 15th, 2024. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Chish, Hawa, Toyoksuk Nusum, Salama. Thank you for joining the conversation. On today's show, recent Grammy Award-winning Imani Winds is in town for the Juno Jazz and Classics Spring Festival. We'll have guest host Christina Michelle from Culture Rich Conversations in studio to chat with these amazing artists who are teaching a workshop tonight at UAS and performing this Friday night at Chapel by the Lake. May is National Speech Language Hearing Month, formerly known as Better Hearing and Speech Month, and the Bartlett Regional Speech Pathology Team is here to talk building communication skills, resources, and more. And this Saturday is the Law Enforcement Torch Run, a fundraiser 5K run, walk, or bike event for Special Olympics Alaska. Fubao will be here to get us fired up. Those conversations, plus Sounds Wild, Burn Note, coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon.
Hansen Gress. Ka eat with the shu yi, we kashuk a yi tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta khanakhaya ha anikach. Gunish cheesh.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
Listening to community-supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ock Bay, and online at ktoo.org. I'm Christina Michelle from Culture Rich Conversations. The music you just heard was titled Variation 13 from the album Passion for Bach and Coltrane, which just won a Grammy this year. Today, I'm speaking with the internationally known 2024 Grammy Award-winning Wind Quintet, Imani Winds. Part of the quintet are Brandon Patrick George, Toyin Spellman Diaz, Kevin Newton, Mark Dover, and Monica Ellis. And today I'm so excited that right here in the studio, I'm having a conversation with Mark and Toyin. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having us.
From their love of performing live to their musical journeys, we'll discuss everything right here today, including their upcoming events and the annual Juno Jazz and Classic Spring Festival. So let's get into this conversation. I understand that you're on the road, you're in the middle of live performances and your public tour. And I appreciate the time that you guys took to come in and have this conversation with me today. Your instrumental legacy speaks for itself, and you've been described as musical storytellers who focus on illuminating the connection between culture from the African diaspora and the classical music in your repertoire. That said, I know that we want to know who's behind the music. So let's get to know you guys a little bit. Is this your first time in Juno?
Actually, Imani Wentz has been here once before, and I had the pleasure of coming to Juno right before I became pregnant with my now 14 and 3/4-year-old daughter. So this is my third time in Juno and happy to be back.
Excellent. Welcome back. And Mark, how about you?
It's my first time in Alaska. We flew in late last night and I couldn't see anything and then woke up and just opened the windows and was blown away.
How's your experience been so far?
I mean, it's been amazing. So far, we played a great community concert at the Art Center down the street, and the audience was so great. The kids were super cute and asked amazing questions. And then we had lunch, and now we're here. So this is it so far.
The party's just awesome. Gotten started. Yeah.
All right. Well, there's lots in store for you here. Yeah. We're very excited that you came. Where are you guys from, Toyin? I'll start with you.
Well, I'm originally from Washington, D.C., but we all live in the metropolitan New York area now. I'm the only one who lives outside of the city in Jersey. But everybody else, Mark lives in Queens. The rest of the group lives in different parts of Manhattan or in Brooklyn, too.
Okay. All right. So what brought you guys together to the ensemble?
Well, Imani Wentz has been around since 1997, so it's been about 27 years now.
Wow.
Toyin is actually an original member, along with Monica Ellis, our bassoonist. And the group was founded in 97 by a woman named Valerie Coleman, who is an amazing flutist and composer. She left the group in 2018 and has gone on to, her music is being played all over the world, but she had a vision to create a quintet made up of musicians of color. And so the name Imani Wentz came to her actually before she even knew who was going to be in it. Imani, the Swahili word for faith, which is one of the seven principles of Kwanzaa. So she set about, casting, as wide a net as she could to try to find the musicians and assembled the original five players who were with the group all the way up until 2016. And then I joined in 2016 as the first, non-original member. And then Brandon joined on in 2018 and Kevin in 2021. So now you have the five that we have to this day.
Mm-hmm. We call it Imani 4.0.
Yeah, right. Imani 4.0.
And Toyin, what instrument do you play?
I'm an oboist.
An oboist. Okay. And how long have you been playing the oboe?
Well, I've been playing the oboe since I was 13, actually. I started piano when I was 5. My parents actually in D.C. moved into this neighborhood called Brooklyn. It was very Catholic. It's by Catholic University. So there was a piano in the convent that we moved into that they converted into a house. So I've started banging on the piano and learned to read music before I could read words, actually.
Wow.
But switched from piano to flute to oboe.
Nice. And Mark, how about yourself?
So I play the clarinet. And growing up in Ann Arbor, Michigan, we had a great public school music program. So everyone was able to play an instrument and the school provided instruments to everyone in the city. So I started in 5th grade on the clarinet and kind of wasn't super serious about it at first. But then around middle school, I started to get deeper into it. And by the time I was 13, I knew that's what I wanted to do. So, yeah.
Wow. Did you ever imagine that you would be on a Grammy Award winning album for your musical talent?
I don't think so. No. I mean, it's always a dream when you're in this industry and in this world. But I never really definitely was never counting on it. That's for sure. So,
yeah, no, it's a dream come true. And actually on this Grammy nominated or Grammy winning album. We've had three Grammy nominations. This is the third one here is the one that actually brought us over the Rainbow Bridge. But this one is especially special because it features my father reading his poetry. The piece was written by our former French horn player, Jeff Scott, a terrific composer, just like Valerie, our original flutist. So he wrote this piece based on my father's poetry. My dad just gave him his book of poetry one day and Jeff went off. And 2 years later, he came back with a concert length piece. And we played it and toured it for many, many years. And we kept it was kind of difficult because, as you just heard, there's piano and jazz trio. There's a string quartet. There's Imani Wentz and the orator. So it's kind of difficult to bring those sounds together well on a recording. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult to record that kind of thing. So it sat on our stands for a long time, but didn't make its way into the recording studio until last year. And so we finally just took the plunge, started our own media company called Imani Wentz Media, and released it ourselves. And here's a thing born of courage and inspiration, and we reaped the ultimate reward.
Excellent. Mark, tell me what is your favorite part about performing live?
The unknown, I think. The feeling that you're putting all of your love for the music and respect for the musicians on stage. You're just kind of putting it out there and just not knowing how people are going to respond in the audience and also how people on the stage are going to respond to each other. I like that. I feel like it's impossible to really emulate that in any other situation than live performance. Yeah. And with that comes the imperfections. Mm. I think that I've been trying in my own life to find a way to embrace that and make that part of the experience of this concept of being in the moment, which is something that you hear not just musicians, but actors and artists always talk about. I think when you are willing to accept the fact that you are not perfect and you're just putting your art out into the world, and there's freedom in that. And you can only really get that in a live experience. Yeah. So I think that's the best part about it for me.
I would agree with that. Sometimes people are, you know, they'll go to a concert and an artist will hit an off note or something and right. then get criticized for it. Yeah. But to me, that's the best part of being at a live concert, right? Right. You're like, this person is real. They're human, flesh and blood, just like yeah. me. They're doing this amazing thing. And it's just all part of the beauty of the performance.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask, what inspires you both? Toyin, I'll go to you first.
What inspires me? Well, other than my daughter, who I've talked about so much, and my family, I think it's kind of ties into what Mark was talking about, or your question about what's the best thing about playing live music. I think the inspiration of playing for people and being able to make a difference and make them feel good that's really inspiring to me. It's very hard to leave your family. Mark has a wife and a very young child, daughter, too. Several of us have families, and being able to leave them and go and do something on the road. We're on the road all year long. Like we're gone a lot. There has to be some reason for doing it. And I think what's inspiring about being in Imani Wentz is this creating of energy that that speaks to people, even though we're kind of being specific about what the music is about. Like we do a lot of music, like you said, that speaks to these times. It tells mm-hmm. stories. These stories might not resonate with everybody, but the music always does. Absolutely. The music always does. So that's really inspiring to me.
What advice would you give someone who wants to make a career out of performing live music?
Practice, practice, practice. You know, it's I think that it's such a hard question to answer because it really depends on what you're trying to do specifically. Mm. But I think in a broad sense, it's not an easy way to make a living by any means. We all know that. So I think it requires a real steadfastness and a real kind of resolve and determination to keep going and to be able to deal with failure, sometimes years and years and years of failure. In other words, people saying no, you know, And just a work ethic, like a really serious, devout work ethic. I mean, I was in from 15 to 23, I was really practicing a lot, you know, hours and hours and hours. And I think that there's a certain amount of quantity of time and isolation that it takes to be an artist. And you have to be willing to deal with that. So if you're willing to do those things, then I would say don't have a plan B. Just keep going. Don't get comfortable. Just like keep practicing, keep playing, keep surrounding yourself with other musicians that are like-minded. And, you know, hopefully it'll work out.
I love that. Don't have a plan B.
Yeah.
Toyin, what would you say to that question?
Well, I would say everything Mark said is 100% right. And I think to add to that, there's also, when you're an artist, a level of commitment to the truth. You have to have people around you who are telling you that doesn't work for me, or, you know, they have to tell you you're not sounding so great, or this idea might not be the best idea. And you can take it or not, but always listen to yourself and listen to people you trust. Surround yourself by people you trust who will tell you what you're doing is right. That could be a teacher, it could be a mentor, it could be a bandmate. We're lucky in Imani Wins to have that in each other. So there's that truth from the outer part. And then there's the inner truth of making sure you're playing music that really works for you and resonates with you. There might be an exploring music so that you know what your truth is. I think truth is expandable. Mm. It can expand or contract, but it's always important to keep searching for your best, whatever it is, your best bandmates, your best sound, the best music for you to be playing.
I love that. Let's talk about what you guys did this afternoon. You had the Brown Bag concert that was at the Juno Arts and Culture Center. How did that go?
It went great. Yeah, it was a lot of people. Actually, we usually play, community concerts with a smaller group. So it was nice to see so many people coming out and just, you know, a bunch of kids, but then also a bunch of parents and just people from the community. So we tried to find a program that, you know, would, you know, be kind of geared towards the kids, but also inclusive of the adults and the audience. And so many questions from the kids and so much curiosity from the audience for what we do. And yeah, it was a blast. It was a perfect way to kickstart the week here.
Awesome. And then tonight you have Workshops for Wins, and that's at 6 o'clock at the UAS Egan Wing Classrooms. So talk to us about what a person who attends tonight can expect.
Right. I think usually we do a lot of these master classes, workshops, usually at universities and schools of music or conservatories. We're on faculty at this really frou-frou, hee-haw conservatory called Curtis Institute of Music. It's so exclusive. Nobody's heard of it. But so we'll go and we'll have people play for us. And we'll make comments and suggestions on how they can do better. And a lot of what we wind up saying in these concerts is just what we were talking about now when you were asking advice for musicians. You always need to practice a lot. If they're wind instruments, blow through your instruments more. But also the idea of knowing your truth and being very honest with yourself about how well you're doing. So people will be there to witness these musicians take in what we have to say. And that should be fascinating. That could be fascinating, I think. A lot of times, if it's a group of people who are going to play for us, like another chamber music group like us, we also talk about what it takes to be in a chamber music group and have it be a place you want to go to. You have to build a community when there are four or five of you. If you guys aren't doing well, Zul could speak to this, you're not going to have a good time. You're not going to have a good time and you're not going to be able to make the best music possible. So that could apply to a doctor who's got a team, or it could apply to anyone really who has to deal with anybody else. So basically everybody in the world.
And tell us who Zul is. We have a third person here in the studio with us, but just not on air.
Oh, okay. Zuhl is a superstar cellist, soloist. He's also a great thinker and planner of programs. So he's the artistic director of Juno Jazz and Classics. And he also works for this famous Sitka summer music series. So, yeah,
Well, the Sitka one is what brought me to Alaska. Actually, it's not true. I was brought to Alaska in 2004 to do one of the early tours the Imani Winds did, which was throughout the state of the Kodiak and Anchorage and Fairbanks and Juneau. But that's very kind of you to say all these things. A very old friend here, Toyin, and I met in, 1987?
87, yeah. We were four.
Yeah.
That was the year I was born.
That was the year you were born. Oh, oh shut up, Mark.
That's really embarrassing. Sorry. For us. But we met in the Washington, D.C. area in an amazing time period where organizations, the arts organizations, not only walked the walk, but they supported the future. Sound Investments, I always say. They created a program called the National Symphony Fellowship Program that if you got in, provided free lessons from musicians in the National Symphony. And so Toyin and I, every week, would sit in the balcony of the National Symphony Kennedy Center and witness Mstislav Rostropovich and every guest artist coming in firsthand to see how it was in music, what it was like to be a musician, to see the hard work and the dedication. Because you really, those who don't know, really don't know. Mm. I'm talking to the audiences. They assume that you walk on stage and just do it. But the hours that you put in, from 15 to 23, it's daunting. It's crippling, psychologically speaking, to spend that amount of time by yourself trying to master something that internally gives you hope, that is kind of the flashlight to your soul as well as your future. This is what we're trying to do here in Juneau. With these workshops, with these brown bag lunches, with the concerts that we're having tomorrow, Winds by the Lake, they're playing at Chapel by the Lake at 5:30 and 7:30 p.m. We're doing that specifically at a small venue, 200 seats or less. So we're doing two shows, a little bit shorter shows. I'm very grateful as the artistic director to thank them for doing two shows because we wanted to not just make it a 500-seat auditorium. We wanted to make it very personal and visceral. And the last thing I'll say is that it's been a long time coming. I've been trying to work and get them here well before COVID. And I say the word COVID only because it really did squash my hopes to bring instruments that required wind because of the COVID stuff. That includes the voice. So I had to wait and wait and wait. So to have them here is a dream come true. Thank you for being here.
Well, thank you so much. This has been such a wonderful conversation. And we got a surprise at the end, too. I'm so excited that we got to hear from you, Zuhl. And so just to recap, we have the workshop for Winds at 6 p.m. tonight at UAS in the Egan Wing classrooms. And then we have Winds by the Lake tomorrow at Chapel by the Lake.
Friday.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Friday. Friday, 5:30 p.m. and 7:30 p.m. at Chapel by the Lake.
Right.
All right. Well, I want to thank you.
I gave you misinformation. I'm sorry. I don't know what day it is anymore. This has been a blur of amazing festivals.
I'm sure it's been
today
a whirlwind.
Right? Yeah.
Today is Wednesday.
All day?
Yeah, the month is May, I think.
So Friday are the concerts. Yeah.
Perfect. And just, I know where you can get this information for sure. You don't have to worry about trusting us. If you just go to jazzandclassics.org, you can get tickets to all of these events and find out more information. And then you can listen to the music by Imani Winds anywhere you love to stream music. And then you can also follow them on imaniwinds.com. I am very appreciative to you. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your time here in Juneau. This is Christina Michelle with a Juneau Afternoon, and we'll be right back.
Thank you. Occasionally, when birds are migrating, grim headlines announce that hundreds of birds have crashed into the same glassy building all in one night. While devastating, these events highlight a problem that's much bigger than any one skyscraper. When birds like this veery fly through populated areas at night, buildings with lights on can cause them to become disoriented. And birds don't see clear glass windows as an obstacle. Instead, they often see the reflection of trees and shrubs and think they're flying to safety. Every year, up to 1 billion birds die when they collide with buildings, including many low-rise buildings and houses. Fortunately, there's a lot that can be done to prevent birds from striking windows. Turning off lights at night and applying special stickers to windows helps birds see them as an obstacle. Designing new buildings with bird safety in mind and making improvements to existing buildings also makes a difference. Every step taken towards addressing this problem can save birds' lives. BirdNote is on a mission to inspire 1 million people to take action to help birds over the next 3 years. To learn what you can do, visit birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Support from Sunny Slope Organic Farm, voted best garden nursery by Best of Juno 2023. Open 10 to 2 weekdays, 10 to 3 Saturdays. Appointments at 907-723-6353. 5 driveways past Eagle Crest Road.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Thanks to Christine Michelle for that last interview with Imani Wins. They were awesome to have in the studio today. The month of May is National Speech Language Hearing Month, formerly known as Better Hearing and Speech Month. This month provides an opportunity to raise awareness about communication disorders and to learn more about the various resources and services available. And joining me to chat about this are two members of the speech pathology team at Bartlett Regional Hospital, Marisha Bourgeois and Shona Osterhout, two of my favorite names in Juno. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to have you in the studio today. Wasa Iati, how's it going?
It's going well.
Yeah, it's starting to get sunny outside, so things are on the up and up.
That's a good thing. So, I was looking into this, what used to be called Better Hearing and Speech Month, and it seems they've changed the name, National Speech Language Hearing Month. It's all the same thing, really, but yeah. Names are names. But really, what is it? What does that mean? What does that mean?
Yeah, well, you know, National Speech Hearing and Language Month is there because we need to bring awareness to kind of speech and language things that people have going on that, you know, people don't think that are an issue. So like for someone like, you know, a lot of people say, oh, speech pathologists, they work with kids on their R's or S's, you know, and that's kind of their limitation. Like, that's what they think. And
right.
That's, you know, that's really very much. I mean, we do that, but that's very much just touching, just the very outer edge of what it is that we actually do.
Yeah. Just the beginning. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our scope of practice is it encompasses way more than that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what kind of things does it encompass? I know there's a lot of big words in terms of like the different things, articulation, which we know that one pretty well, but apraxia,
dysphagia.
No, it's this
dysarthria.
Dysarthria. Yes. There we go.
Yes.
So there's a lot of those words that maybe people hear and don't understand. Can we break down a couple of them and give some examples of what that is?
Yeah. Well, I'll start first because one of the biggest things, if you're an inpatient in the hospital and we come in, we're usually there to check your swallow. And a lot of people, I mean, if I had a dollar for every inpatient that was like, I can speak just fine. And I'm like, no, I'm here to check your swallow, because speech and swallow use the same cranial nerves.
Okay.
And so often if something has happened neurogenically to a person, like a stroke, head injury, or if you have something like ALS or Parkinson's, we will see some of those pathways damaged, and it often impacts your swallow. So we are there to check swallow. So that swallowing, fancy word, dysphagia.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
So that's one word. You want to take the next one?
Yeah, sure. So it's a kind of a good segue, because, you know, our vocal folds are kind of what we use. You might call a voice box is our larynx, but our vocal folds or vocal cords are what we use to produce sound. And for dysphagia, they're the last line of defense. So a lot of times when people have like a voice that might be a little more hoarse, or it might sound kind of rough or something like that, breathy. Yeah. Then also accompanying that might be some swallowing concerns, right? So like coughing on thin liquids or something like that. And because those things go hand in hand. But for dysarthria, that's actually, it's a motor speech disorder. So it also happens, like it could be Parkinson's or post-stroke, also neurogenic disorders. And that would be, you might notice like a slurring of speech, right? So oftentimes if somebody might have a stroke, the very first symptom might be slurring of speech, or not able to move an arm or something like that. But the slurring of speech comes pretty quickly. And that's because those cranial nerves, again, are impacted. And so we work on those, you know, as inpatients, but we also do outpatient work. And, you know, speech pathologists work with both adults and pediatrics. So going from, you know, there's certain speech pathologists that'll work with like 0 to 2 years old. There's certain ones that'll work with pediatrics like 3 to 18, and then adults, you know, over 18. And we're kind of working on all different things, but we work in the hospital. So if people have like acute injury, so a TBI or a stroke or something like that. But we also work with like Parkinson's patients who maybe are, you know, they have a harder time being heard because their volume is highly impacted by a dysarthria. Mm. And so we would work with them on, say, loudness or their vocal folds coming closer together so they can be heard by their loved ones and people they care about.
And TBI is?
Traumatic brain injury.
Right.
And then, yeah. So, yeah. You know, within that, now the newer kind of category is MTBI for concussion. So concussion and TBI.
Oh, I see. Okay. It is interesting because what you're saying about that is like, I think sometimes we take for granted the ability to speak, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it impacts people on a daily basis, but they might not kind of even think about how it impacts. Like I do a lot of voice work with people. So, you know, depending on like as we get older, our vocal folds, they bow. They like kind of they don't come together all the time when we talk. So, you know, as we age, people's voices might get a little bit softer or they might you know, they're just like breathier because those vocal folds aren't coming together. And it's called presbyphonia. And that's something that people don't, you know, they have no idea, but it impacts people all the time. They're like, I can't talk to my friends. I can't talk to my family, can't hear me.
Mm.
So, you know, people don't think about that, but it is impactful.
And it's like a gradual change. It can be like, you may not even notice it. Like, I mean, this is sort of silly, but when I was younger, I was always like, oh, I'm going to smoke and drink so that I can get like the Bryan Adams voice. I wanted raspy. The raspy voice, yeah. But you end up paying for that later, right? Because you're actually harming, you know, that those things. And I do understand that about how people, as you get the voice gets softer as you get older. Right. And it becomes, and you notice that, and that is something you could notice in someone. And you also mentioned something earlier that I think is interesting, which is those Because obviously you're working with people who have been, I wanted to make this clear too, I think this is right, but you get a referral, right, for rehab services from your primary doctor or from a doctor, and then that's how you get to the speech pathology at Bartlett Regional Hospital. And that's, you can ask questions, but you can call the number and talk to them about it, but you really need to speak to your physician first. But what's interesting is, so you're working with people who have something happening probably, but I'm also curious as like, because you've mentioned a couple things of people, what they can look for potential things that might be coming down the line, right? In terms of if you're noticing certain things about your speech, that can be an indicator to other things happening with your body, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that is like, that's fascinating because it's really sort of taking the moment to, interestingly enough, listen to your body, right? In terms of what it's saying to you through that, because it's connect, it's all connected.
It's a connected system.
Yeah, that is so.
Say that all the time.
That is so interesting.
Yeah, I mean, because if you think about it, like, you know, if you're, if you notice you're, you have less volume, you know, less, we call it loudness. So less loudness, maybe you have some, you know, if there's tremor, but tremor, vocal tremor, right? So you might notice something going on there. You might notice like, I'm really hoarse or I'm really sounding, you know, people might say raspy, you know, that kind of thing. There's all sorts of indications that are pretty, and sometimes go right along with swallowing. So
interesting. Yeah. The swallow is really interesting too. Like that can be, cause you get that, you know that, I mean, most people know that from when they get sick or have strep throat or when they have a sore throat, it gets really difficult to swallow. It was one of the first indications for COVID, right? When you were like having difficulty swallowing. So those muscles are so, so vital. I'm curious about this question, which is there something to speech? Obviously, the speech and the brain are connected, right? But there's sometimes, I know this is like, this is really just for me. It's a personal question.
I love it.
Getting my own service right here. No, but like the idea, when you switch words around, like when you have, like if you, you know, you put them in a different place and they're backwards. Is that something that is, that's not, a, is it a precursor to something or is that just like my brain thinking too fast and I'm messing things up?
Please get a referral. No, I mean, that could be so many things, you know, our brain processes are so different, you know, that could, you know, someone with maybe ADHD, cause your brain's kind of firing fast and, you know, and then you might slow yourself down and be like, oh, yeah, that's backwards. I mean, it could be kind of something with maybe a learning disability within language.
Right.
I mean, it could, and it could just be nothing.
Right. It could be nothing. Sometimes it's just the first letter of the words and those get flipped. Right.
Yeah.
And that to me is, I don't know what that is. It's just, it's always been there as something that has happened to me. So I was just curious because, you know, we're getting older, right? Time just seems to move forward.
Keeps going.
I have a big birthday this month and you know,
I do,
55.
Wow. Yay!
Yeah. And what's so funny is my grandfather retired when he was 55. We just don't do that anymore.
No,
we're just going to be here for a long time. But anyway, so the things that I want to be clear about this too. So if somebody does have like an interest in speech pathology, obviously, there's the things where you might, if you're already at a doctor, they might refer you. Mm-hmm. But are there other people who might have services that they would require that aren't necessarily from like the emergency room or a fall or, you know, Parkinson's or something like that, that they might want to come and see you all?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So in the outpatient world, you know, the individual is typically medically stable. And, you know, it sounds like anything from, I'm glad you're bringing this up, language, you know, so we've been talking a lot about speech and voice, but anything within language, and then also stuttering. There's a lot of people that have dysfluency out there and they might be like, I finally feel confident enough to maybe want to seek services for that. Cognition, I'm a certified brain injury specialist, and so I work a lot with people who are concerned about memory issues, word finding, things like that.
I do gender-affirming voice care. So people who might feel like there's incongruence between their gender and their voice. Mm-hmm. So there's tons of different things that, you know, it's at that point, it's not disorder, right? It's actually just kind of moving speech language to a place where people feel comfortable where they're at and their quality of life. That's really what it's about. It's making sure people's quality of life is where they want it to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And the number I have to, can people call the department to ask questions, or do you prefer to actually have them be referred first? Like for something like the gender voice, you know, care?
Yeah, they absolutely call and ask, because, you know, it, you know, we, the process is we would want to get a referral, but, you know, you want to ask a lot of questions to see, you know, who's the right fit. I mean, right. That's important too, you know, because we spend a lot of time with people and you want to make sure it's you know, a good fit, and it's also
match. Well, yeah. And you have such a wide swath of services.
It's so true.
And I don't think that the Bartlett website, your section, really does it justice in terms of all the things that could be possibly taken care of by the speech pathology team.
I know.
And so the number you can call is 796-8431. That's 796-8431. But if you do have something, it is best to probably just go to your general practitioner and talk to them about it and be like, hey, I heard on the radio the speech pathology team, they said I need a referral. Let me get a referral and go see them about these different things. Because maybe some doctors don't know the services that you all. And I think that's part of why we're actually having National Speech Language Hearing
Month. That's exactly it.
Exactly. Right? And then, I feel like we could do a show. We could do a show on dysphagia, a show on voice disorders, a show on apraxia. We've done a show on aphasia.
Yeah, we have. We did do that. Yeah, for sure. I think that would be really great. And we have to have you back again and again to be able to do that, because it is important. I think it's so connected, right? Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
And we haven't even touched on social language.
I know, right? So like pragmatics, you know, how we interact socially in an environment.
Oh.
That's like a whole nother. And we do that a lot with young people, but we do it a lot with adults too. So
is that like helping them like build confidence in things, or specific?
That's part of it. Yeah. But a lot of times it's like social communication, like how to work in a group, you know, things like that.
I see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I need that too.
That is not true.
Marisha, Shona, thank you so much for coming in and helping us learn a little bit more about this. Of course, you can go to bartletthospital.org. There is a link on the top where you can get to different departments, and you are all part of the rehabilitation services page. So if you go to Bartlett, there's a tab up there. Click the rehabilitation services page. And on that, you'll see all the different services, occupational therapy and obviously speech therapy. And you can find out more information or talk to your doctor and get a referral. So Gunatheesh for coming in today. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Boston.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Up next, the annual Law Enforcement Torch Run is happening this Saturday. It's a 5K run, bike, walk. And it's a fundraiser for Special Olympics and is happening throughout the state. We'll talk with Fu Bao and Kurt and get fired up about this event next on Juno Afternoon. But first, here is Sounds Wild.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
On a snowy winter day, I'm checking my trail camera in the woods. I come across several deer beds in the forest, patches of melted snow where deer bedded down and slept. And as usual, there are lots of pellet groups. Deer poop frequently, at least a couple dozen times a day. And it's not a surprise to see small piles of shiny black deer pellets in the snow. I pick up a few and save them in a clean plastic Ziploc bag. Deer researchers are analyzing deer pellets to learn what deer eat in Southeast Alaska, and a brand new method is providing great insights. The method is called DNA metabarcoding. It's not the deer DNA that's read like a product barcode. It's the DNA of the plant remains in the deer pellets. The DNA is extracted, amplified, and sequenced. Short sections of the DNA specific to the plant species are identified and compared to a database of plants. A match identifies the plant. Deer have an extremely varied diet, generally browsing on a wide variety of plants every day. On Prince of Wales Island in Southeast Alaska, pellets indicate that a meal for a deer, on average, includes 7 different plants. For Sounds Wild, I'm Riley Woodford.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Clan Edi have stewarded this area for thousands of years. Today, our studios sit on a spot once part of the tidelands, now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. We recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations. Listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Joining me now are Fubao Hartle, Special Olympics athlete, Kurt Stage Harvey with the Juno Police Department and the Alaska Peace Officers Association, and Claire Pavia, also known as Fubao's mom. It's the annual Law Enforcement Torch Run, and it's happening this Saturday, May 18th at 10 a.m., and you can register at specialolympicsalaska.org. There's probably a link there, but it's also specialolympicsalaska.org/law-enforcement-torch-run. If you just put that in there, you'll find it. You can even just put in Google Law Enforcement Torch Run Juno, and I'm sure it will come up. But welcome, Fubao, Kurt, and Claire. Gunath Chisha Ye Adi, thank you so much for having you all in today. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thanks.
Wasa Iti, how's it going?
Awesome. Thank you for so much for making the help with this. This is a big important thing, and I want to make sure everybody spread the word about this.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's talk about what this event is. Give us the rundown of what is the Torch Run.
Okay. Hey there. Thanks again for having us. It's always great to be with Fubao on the radio and to promote about fundraiser for Special Olympics. It's the biggest fundraiser they have locally for Special Olympics. And the coolest thing that all the money, every single dollar that is raised here stays local. So the Special Olympics athletes here in town are very active. They do basketball and swimming and
bowling. I think. Yep. Yeah.
He's a big bowler.
Yeah.
And they also go to state and national events. And so fundraising is an important part of what they do. And Law Enforcement Torch Run is happening all across the United States and across Alaska for sure. And we have these cool t-shirts and we run with the athletes. We have a great torch that we run up and down Twin Lakes with. And it's a way to promote the relationship between law enforcement to raise money with Special Olympics.
I love that. I just want to shout out these other cities around the state because I think it's so cool that this is all happening on the same day. Mm-hmm. And it's Anchorage, the Central Peninsula, Craig, Delta Junction, Homer, Juneau, Kodiak, Nome, Seward, Sitka, Valdez, Ketchikan, Matsu Valley, and other places as well. It's like, it says here in the notes, it's expected to be the largest simultaneous multi-community running event held in Alaska this year.
Wow.
And that there's a goal of raising $150,000 for the Special Olympics Alaska communities. And I love that you said that, Kurt, that all the money that's raised isn't going to like the national organization or anything like that. It's specifically to support athletes like Fubao right here in Juneau. Fubao, what is your favorite part of the Torch Run?
To me, I feel like my biggest part of my heart is to meet people I've never seen since a year, a year ago, to see everybody coming together, coming together and as a community giving back to special, because we need to keep we need to keep this special going for a long time. Because I feel like I had a really good impact from it, like bowling, like swimming local games, like going to state my first time, so I'm up to Anchorage for swimming.
Oh, you went to state for swimming?
No, I'm going to go to state.
Oh, you're going to go. You are going to go.
With a whole team from judo.
Oh, that is so cool. And this, the fundraiser then helps to support you all getting up there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's so cool. And then the other thing that you said was that what's really cool is that you get to see some of the people that maybe you haven't seen since last year.
Yes.
Right. To come out for the torch run, because it's a pretty big event, right? Like there's a lot. There's like hundreds of people there.
Well, I don't know if there'd be hundreds. That'd be awesome. And I think that's Fubao's dream is to have hundreds of people there. So if we this radio can spot can help that, that'd be great.
Yeah.
They can come out. They don't even have to run. They can walk. They can wheel. They can rollerblade. It's a nice bike path. So anybody can fit on there. And it's just mainly to raise the awareness and to raise the funds. So
yeah.
If you donate $35, you get a fancy T-shirt. If you donate more than that, you get a pat on the back and a handshake and congratulations. And last year, I know that locally, the Special Olympic athletes really do an amazing job and they raised the most money they ever have
last year
for Special Olympics. And I'm not sure we...
$15,000
last year.
So, and what's cool is, so this is where it is at Twin Lakes, right? And I think, yes. I think from last year, this is, you told me that basically you're going up and back and forth on the bike path doing the miles, right? Or doing the distance for the 5K?
Yeah, it's basically a 5K if that's what you're out for.
Yeah.
And, we will start at the pavilion. We'll have a little ceremony there. We'll light the torch. All the athletes will take a picture together with all the law enforcement folks and caregivers and friends that are there. And then, you run down the bike path, past the first lake, past the second lake to the little building down the other end. And then you turn back around and we'll have a finish line set up for them. We usually put out crime tape because it's kind of fun, a police theme.
Yeah, I like that.
And people are cheering you on as we rain or shine. Last year was pretty horrible, but we all did it and had a fun time. But if you want to do a true 5K, you do have to turn around at the start line and go back a little ways to
go back a little bit more,
make it a 5K.
And that's part of the pledge. And I know that you can register. As I said, I gave you the website to register, but you can also register early on Saturday if you show up at 9:30 at the Twin Lakes Shelter. And 9:30, you can register then, right? You may not be able to get a T-shirt by then; they might be sold out. But it's $35 to donate to be able to get the T-shirt.
That's right.
Yeah,
yep.
That's pretty great.
Pretty minimal.
And could really be if people want to eat, really be food afterwards, or really not be food afterwards? Because I want to make sure it's okay to eat afterwards.
So we can eat after, you're saying?
Yes.
Yeah, yep. There would be like, so you get done and you build up a hunger,
mm-hmm.
Right?
The appetite, yeah.
Yeah, build up the appetite. Now, Fubao, have you carried the torch before?
No.
Yes.
I have. But I
just for a little bit. You can see it on the poster. There's a picture of him.
Oh, it's a picture of you on the poster.
He started out for a little bit with.
Oh, I see. Okay. Yeah. That's cool. So you have held the torch.
Yes.
Do you remember what it looks like, Fubao, the torch?
It's flame with a real flame,
not fake. It looks real to me on this photo.
How easy is it to hold that thing?
Hard.
It's heavy. It is so heavy. Yeah.
It's got to be heavy because it's probably got all kinds of like mechanisms in there to make keep the fire going.
No, it's just regular kerosene in there, or torch flame. But it's made out of bronze, like solid bronze.
Gosh.
And so that's a great thing to be able to pass it along.
Wow.
Between the officers and the athletes so they can share the load.
Wow. And I think we probably want to give a shout out to some of the sponsors for this event, Global Credit Union, GCI, and Matson, who are helping to put this on, as well as the Alaska Peace Officers Association. You work with Special Olympics to get this event put together, right, Kurt?
Yeah, it's been a great partnership over the years. I've been involved since I went to the Police Academy 10 years ago, and since I've been back in Juneau, tried to help organize the thing. And they have a really amazing friends and family group that run Special Olympics here in Juneau, and I've got to know them over the years. So it's been a special relationship.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. And Fubao, who should come out for this event?
Everybody. We need to have a jam-packed, bumper-to-bumper, tail-to-tail rim traffic up to train next parking lot, bumper to bumper traffic.
Yeah, make it full. Make it full. Make the event full.
Or carpool.
Or you could carpool. But then that doesn't get FUBAU what he wants, yes. Which is a traffic jam, it sounds like.
Last night, I did my first local games at Swimming and at Diamond Park last night.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. That's so cool. I can't believe you're going to be going to state. That's really fun with the swimming team. And I'm sure you're going to come back on the show in a couple months when we get to bowling season, mm-hmm. Which is in the fall. And it's like, I know, FUBAU, you've become such a great advocate and an outspoken person and coming on the show and representing and for all these cool events. And this one is really awesome. The Torch Run is a great way to support. And even if you can't make it, I think you can make a donation probably on the website at SpecialOlympicsAlaska.org. So if you can't make it, maybe go on there. You can donate the $35, get a t-shirt, or the best thing to do is donate and also go and support and be part of the run and get out there. Hopefully it won't be too disgusting in terms of weather. But even then, that can be fun too, right? FUBAU, a little mud, never hurt anybody.
Yeah. Let's get everybody, yeah, fired up.
Fired up.
I love that.
Damn packed house.
I love it. FUBAU, Kurt, thank you so much. Claire, thank you for coming in. It's the annual Law Enforcement Torch Run. It's happening this Saturday, May 18th at 10 a.m. You can register at SpecialOlympicsAlaska.org and or you can go and register Saturday morning at 9:30 a.m. It's going across the state, so you'd be part of all of this. It'll be like a group community event, which is statewide, which is kind of cool. And you can walk or you can run. You can rollerblade. You can bring your bike. So if you got littles on their tricycle, that would count. Like, you can bring everybody out and be part of this really cool event on Saturday. So really appreciate you coming. And good to cheese for being here today. And we'll see you again soon.
Fine. Can I ask someone?
Yeah.
We need to have a standing ovation.
Standing ovation. I love that. A standing ovation is always
good.
Happens
at the finish line, yeah.
Thank you for having us all on, Boston.
Definitely. Thank you so much for being here. Gunnath Sheesh.
Gunnath Sheesh.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon. Have a wonderful Wednesday. Juno Afternoon airs Tuesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTOO Juno 104.3 and KAUK Juno Auk Bay 91.7. Hello, out the road. Find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp, and a special thank you to our guest host, Christina Michelle from Culture Rich Conversations. Thanks, and have a glorious Juno evening.